Celebration 25. 25 years of making new friends, of holding hands with Southern California. News, information, and entertainment. Join Celebration 25 with
Bill Jenkins.
Well, welcome to a Saturday night on KABC. It's been a while since we've had a three-hour show to do it. And from now till midnight, it's you and me. Our scheduled guests tonight, and they have not yet arrived, and I don't know whether they'll make it or not. I hope they will. It's Doctors Lee and Vivian Blatton, and we'll talk about the reality of the intervention with them when they get here, the authors of Heirs to the Gods. But until such time as they do, we can talk about that. Perhaps you're familiar with the Heirs of the Gods. We've had some really sparkling hours with Lee and Vivian before. To give you an idea of what the subject matter was and perhaps to provoke your imagination just a little bit, we have heard time and time again and then seen time and time again ancient artifacts, with the pyramids, the plains, the Nazca Plains, all over the world, in which there were hieroglyphics and there were writings and there was all kinds of communication being made that we did not know what it meant. However, as a race, that our intelligence increased, we began to understand those things. We began to see hieroglyphics that came out of Egypt and out of Mesopotamia and that area that were rockets, as if the ancients were drawing us pictures of rockets that they had seen. We saw the Nazca Plains. We wondered what that was. As we look at them from great distances, we see that those are huge runways that were built. And, of course, the many revelations that are within the pyramids. Well, Doctors Lee and Vivian Gladden went to another such artifact, which was well known. And using their expertise in archaeology and cryptology, in etymology, the study of words, in many different disciplines, they found an amazing story in this artifact. An amazing story about a group of people who came here 35 or 40,000 years ago to colonize this planet. They came from a planet that was in orbit around the star Arcturus. But they didn't colonize this planet, or intend to colonize this planet, by bringing their people down here and starting a colony. What they did instead was to set off a section of this planet and perfectly control it, so that no weather could come in and they could control everything about it, like we would do in a laboratory here. And they built a new species of living thing, and they did that by taking the DNA molecule of the indigenous primates that lived on the planet at this time, combining them with their own DNA molecule, and with that DNA base were able to actually replicate a whole different human being, which I think in archaeology we would refer to him as the Cro-Magnon man. And he was totally different from anything else that was on the planet at the time, because he had a lot of the attributes of these people from Arcturus, who, of course, were highly advanced. Stood up straight, for one thing. Had a smaller cervical cavity, for another thing, in order to achieve the standing up straight. And we find out in this particular artifact a lot about what happened there. The task force commander, if I can use that term, if you will, who was highly regarded in this celestial society, was very deeply involved with what was happening on the earth, but he had very great differences of opinion with his supreme commander. And he violated one of the cardinal rules in the development of these new civilizations, and evidently this society did it all along. And that was that he allowed for the, by a DNA mix in the diet, for the development of the cerebral cortex of these new human beings that they were doing, that they were making here, which in turn created nothing more than smart animals, which was not the idea in the beginning. They were to be brought along as physical beings first, and then slowly their mental attributes would be allowed to grow, but they grew prematurely that way. The process here then, because it was a violation of the rules and of the standing orders, caused the supreme commander of that group to relieve him of his command, but he thought he was very right. And there was actually a battle here, a space battle involved, as he was relieved of his command by another commander. All of this took a lot of time, and the technology that the space people had brought to the planet had to be lifted off the planet because a launch window had been reached. And rather than kill off the experiment, because indeed those were human beings and they didn't really know what was going on, they were allowed to live otherwise. It's a fascinating story. And that story comes right out of the pages of the Bible. And we know some of the players, according to this research. The task force commander who went astray, violated the rules, created the problem, has a name. His name was Lucifer. His commander, the supreme commander of this group, was headquartered in the planet that revolves around Arcturus, had a name also. Jehovah. Lucifer was succeeded in his command by Michael. Jehovah had an aide-de-camp by the name of Gabriel. And later, a pure clone of Jehovah was made many thousands of years later, whom we know as Jesus. So it's a fascinating story that the Gladdens have to tell. And I hopefully they haven't been delayed in some way that we can't get to that. So that was what we were going to talk tonight. I'm very familiar with it. You'll find it in one of the most marvelous books you can ever read called Heirs of the Gods. And we wanted to talk about that. And if you've read Heirs or if you have some more questions about that or any of the other things, by the way, until Drs. Lee and Vivian Gladden get here, you're certainly welcome to call in and let's you and I have a lot of conversation about that. But you don't need to limit it to that particular subject. We've been into free energy. We've been into firewalking. We've been into the out-of-body experience. We've been into all of that. And it's just you and me, and let's talk. In Los Angeles, the number is 520-TALK, T-A-L-K. All the numbers end in talk. In the San Fernando Valley, and that includes the Simi Valley, and all the way down to Santa Monica and West Los Angeles, your number is 990-TALK, and I'd love to talk to you about whatever is on your mind in that area. If you're down in Orange County, your number is 750-TALK. And if you're in Pasadena, Glendale, and Burbank, you can call in at 244-TALK, T-A-L-K. Our lines are open, and we're ready to talk to you. Out in the San Gabriel Valley, call us. We have plenty of time to talk about it all. The number is 448-TALK there. If you're down in the South Bay area, Manhattan Beach, Palos Verdes, Redondo Beach, Rolling Hills, Torrance.
I'm hoping that he might have lectures or demonstrations at some of the local colleges, such as UCI, mm-hmm. You know, something like that.
That, as far as I know, that's not in his plans at this mm-hmm. present time, but there certainly will be, once it gets into its commercial phase, an enormous amount of information available to you. There is a lot of work that has to be done in order to satisfy and placate the bureaucrats and mm-hmm. all of the others, because the idea that you can have all of the energy you can possibly need in your home for free, other than paying for the device and having its maintenance, of course, shakes at the very foundation of a lot of economic bases. They'd rather you do what you're doing now.
Could you tell me the approximate size and weight of the device?
It'll be about half the size as it looks right now from the last information I have of the average air conditioner thing that sticks outside the house, you know, mm-hmm. in the ground if you have a central air conditioning unit.
Was that the size of the unit that he had at his demonstration at Town Hall?
No, that unit was smaller. That's a breadboard. That's a very, very crude device.
Uh-huh.
And certainly wasn't able to produce enough energy to power a home, although it'll do a lot.
Well,
but it was basically a breadboard model.
Could it possibly power a refrigerator or a stereo? I'm sort of interested in building one of these things, so I'd like to be able to hook it up.
Smaller versions, which are certainly planned, they will be small enough that they will sell those to the manufacturers of refrigerators and air conditioning units, and whenever you buy those units, you don't plug them in, you just turn them on.
Well, if I was to purchase the plans through Tesla Book Company, would I be able to take those plans and after building the unit, hook it into a stereo or a refrigerator and have the thing work?
Well, not with that unit. What that unit will do is show you the theory and see how it works, and you was, you know, if you're an inventive kind of guy, now that you understand the theory, you can elaborate on that and make one big enough to power a city if you want to, because mm-hmm. you will see how it works. But that particular unit that you will get your schematics for is simply one that's designed to show you that you can tap the energy that's all around us. That is a gravity field stressed scalar wave generator.
So this generator then is portable. I could take it in my car and it'd still be running then, for instance, you know, just drive around to Santa Barbara or something.
That's right.
Huh, interesting. Thank you very much.
Okay, Jim, thank you very much for your interest. And be sure to get those plans from Tesla Book Company, if you will, and play with that if you're inclined in, you know, in electronics. It's a fascinating thing. There are a number of them working in the Los Angeles area right now.
Any ideas to when he'd be able to have a unit that could be hooked into generators or alternators? Because I gather that as is, you can't really do it. It's going to require some sort of modification to the unit itself.
What do you mean?
Well, the model that would come from the schematics from Tesla's book company,
mm-hmm.
as I understand it from what you're saying to me, is that I could not hook this thing up and have it power something.
I don't think it would power too much. It wasn't even designed to do that. Certainly in Bedini's laboratory, it has gone a lot further than that. And he's actually done what you would have the ability to do after you see how the theory works.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the theory, it seems on the surface, violates the second law of thermodynamics and the law of conservation of energy. Actually, it doesn't. It's just a keener or a more clear understanding of those. And we've been rather closed-minded about those things in the scientific community.
Well, okay, Bill. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Right. And Maria.
Oh, good evening, Bill. Your voice sounds so nice.
Well, thank you.
I enjoy your show so much. My father's 91.
Mm-hmm.
He was born in Athens, Greece, and as a boy, before he came to this country, he used to lay down by the Acropolis and the Parthenon. And now he says to me all the time, how did they ever build these things so many thousands of years ago, and how did they ever build the pyramids?
No one knows how they built the pyramids. We certainly understand how they built the ancient Greek structures and some of the fascinating structures that are even in Rome, like the Colosseum in Rome was a magnificent... You know, that was the first dome stadium, by the way. That was the first Astrodome.
Is that right?
The Colosseum in Rome. Yeah.
So perfect.
And it was way ahead of its time. Fascinating things about it. When they would build the first tier of the Colosseum, for instance, for the workmen to work on the second tier, they would fill that in with dirt. And I think there were five or six tiers or something. And after they had finished it all, it was full of dirt. And they were very clever, the Romans. You know how they got that dirt removed, which would be a tremendous job today for us to remove that much dirt. Can you imagine... say the Colosseum here in Los Angeles filled with dirt, how long it would take us to get all that dirt out. It took the Romans 2 years, and it was done by hand. But you know what they did?
What?
As they were filling it with dirt, they threw gold coins in the dirt. And, of course, during the construction time, that was all guarded, and no one could get to it. And so when he wanted the dirt removed, they just said, people, take your buckets and go in there and take the dirt out, and... most likely we'll find a gold coin.
Well, my great-grandfather did that in the clay pits in Athens, too, for the tiles that they made,
right.
You know, 100 years ago. They threw coins in there, and then the workers did that.
But we can understand the construction that was used, and it was certainly advanced, but they had an awful lot of slave labor in order to achieve those, and a lot of time to build those marvelous edifices in Athens.
But they don't know about things.
The pyramids are still a mystery. There is a prevailing thought now that perhaps those stones were actually cast stones. And one of the reasons that they feel that, and they really haven't proved it, but they have shown in checking some of those stones that hair is in the stone. And the only way you could have hair in the stone is for it to have been cast.
Yeah.
And the stones, of course, were perfect, and they line up with each other. They very well may have been cast stones. Heretofore, we had thought that they came from a quarry that was located quite a distance to the south. And in getting those stones of that size to the pyramid site is something that we can't even do right now.
As well as
build the pyramids. If you were to give our largest construction companies or a conglomerate of them all of the budget they wanted, and you know, the wealth of the world, they still couldn't build those pyramids.
I always had a strange feeling they had some kind of an electrical force that we don't know about that lifted these things.
They had something that we don't have, whether it was mental power,
yes.
It was a different kind of power.
I think it was.
Technology that is lost to us, we don't know.
Well, I hope maybe tonight they'll bring... I love to hear about the pyramids,
mm-hmm.
so I'll be listening.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Bill.
Thank you very much, Maria, for calling.
All right.
I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind on a Saturday night. We are anxiously awaiting the appearance of Drs. Lee and Vivian Gladden, and we will get into this magnificent story I just kind of touched upon with you that's found in their book, Heirs of the Gods. But until they get here, we'll talk to you about anything that's on your mind, those things that we generally touch on these Saturday nights when it's time for Open Mind. How are you?
Yowie, I better turn down my radio. No, I don't think I have to.
You're okay.
Listening to you a little while ago, and there was something you said about the Bible. I'm not really familiar about everything in the Bible for sure. You know,
mm-hmm.
I read, well, there's a lot of different things. I want to know.
I'm waiting, Larry.
Yeah. I think I better hang up, but I wanted to get that show below my head. You know, this guy upstairs, every time I start listening, you know, he stamps on the floor. So that's about all I needed. Is that okay?
I suppose. Okay, Larry. That's all right. I hope Larry gets it all figured out. Let me give you the numbers if you want to call. We do have...
I have a question about John Bedini's machine.
Sure, go ahead.
That... he doesn't have a patent on it, right?
John has made all of the basic scientific innovations that are accumulation of his work. He certainly used a lot of the ideas of Nikola Tesla,
mm-hmm.
of T. Henry Morey, of Thomas E. Bearden. Those are all in the public domain.
Oh, they are.
Number one, you cannot get a patent in the United States for a machine that violates the second law of thermodynamics. They just won't give it to you.
Well, what about that other... Oh, excuse me, go ahead.
It's snake oil, but the fact that it works is immaterial. So it's been put in the public domain, and life goes on anyway, despite what the bureaucrats in Washington think.
What about the other gentleman that was also applying for a patent on the free energy concept? Would that... if he did eventually get awarded that patent, would that affect... John's machine and...
Not at all. You're talking about the Joe Newman device.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Joseph Newman down in Loosedale, Mississippi, has indeed developed a magnetic type of device that does power itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been proven that it powers itself. They have gone to court, and even the masters in the court have said, yes, it does what it says it's supposed to, but he still can't get a patent on it yet. And that whole thing is up in the air. The difference in Joe Newman's device and John Bedini's device is quite simple. Joe Newman's device develops a massive amount of torque, and the Bedini device develops electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a need for both of those kind of machines, and the great need being that you do not have to buy fuel in order to make them work.
Yeah.
They are using massive amounts of fuel, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
They are not, we say, free energy device. Free because you don't have to pay for oil or something like that. They're getting the energy from the energy that is around us at all time.
Mm-hmm.
They are not perpetual motion machines. There is no such thing. I guess the nearest thing to a perpetual motion machine is a celestial body like the Earth. And who knows, one day it may run down as far as that goes. But the term perpetual motion machine was something that was fabricated around the turn of the century to belittle the science that was available even at the turn of the century for these type devices, which would, of course, preclude the great use of petroleum and the other things that we use.
What's the current plans as far as having the first commercial one available on the market?
They're going full tilt. It's a difficult job to do that. It's being handled very well, and there will be some rather startling announcements, I think, in the not-too-distant future for it.
Do you mean within this year?
That is the plan. I would bet on it.
Oh, great. Okay.
All right, does that help you?
Yeah, sure.
All right, thank you very much, Mike. I appreciate your interest.
Okay.
Lucille.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Good evening. I'm very much interested in this generator.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 79 years old, and I depend on dividends from utility stocks.
Mm-hmm.
What is going to happen to them?
Well, if you are a stockholder in a utility company, this is probably one of the best pieces of information you ever had in your life. as these devices start moving into usage around the country, their first impact on the utility companies will be a lessening in its demand curve for electricity, which means that the stockholders will not be saddled with the enormous, costly job of capital formation to build more Diablo Canyons. And they won't have to do that, so as a stockholder, you will be much better off. Secondly, the devices, though they are made at initially the size that would power just the electrical needs of your home, they also can be made such a size that it would provide the utility company with all of the electricity it needs, and they would be getting that electricity for free, other than the cost of the generator itself and the maintenance thereof. And those cost savings can be passed on to the consumers, but at the same time, the stockholders will have a valid and very good investment. So it will stop you having to spend, as a stockholder, massive amounts of money on petroleum and all of the other things that you're doing in nuclear power in order to serve the needs of your customers.
Then it isn't a duplication of what Tesla went through in his day when he was fought so seriously.
Hopefully that will not happen again. That was one of the saddest moments of capitalism.
Indeed it was.
I just
wondered if there might be a duplication of that again.
You can rest assured that it will not be allowed to happen again.
Mm-hmm. May I ask you something else?
Mm-hmm.
Have you experienced the out-of-body that you wanted to do so badly?
I'm glad you asked, Lucille, and the answer is no.
You haven't?
I have not yet gone out-of-body.
Oh.
Well, I suppose, I'm told we all go out of body every night, but I mean as a conscious experience.
I know, but you wanted to for so long.
Yeah.
I had hoped that by now you had made it.
Well, I haven't given it up. I have just kind of put it on the back burner.
Well, thank you very much, and good luck.
All right, Lucille. Thank you very much. And as a stockholder of a utility company, you're going to be
be all right. Well, after all, I'm 79, so I guess it doesn't matter too much. I was just curious.
Okay, thank you very
much. Thank you.
I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. I'll be back in just a moment.
Well, Bill, I've read the Gladden's book, and I find it a fascinating book.
Isn't it?
Yes, it really is. But I have some questions for you personally, if that's okay.
We'll try.
Okay. Do you believe that Satan or a fallen celestial actually exists?
We know that there is a force out there that is causing man to do himself in.
Uh-huh. But the Gladdens talk about actual people.
Well, you have to understand that their point of reference is the Bible.
Right.
Only. And they're not trying to be mystic or any of these things. They're simply relating what the etymology of these ancient texts are showing us. And they use a lot of ancillary texts along with that, the ancient writings of the Mesopotamians and the others. And that story that they're telling you in there about Lucifer and how he was banished then from this whole activity and was actually put in exile until such time as they can come back and deal with him is what their research is showing them that the Bible is saying.
Uh-huh. Well, if we assume that Lucifer actually does exist, wouldn't he be a very deceptive person and, probably more intelligent than us?
Well, you certainly can imagine. Now, one of the premises of the Bible were that the people from Arcturus, or the Arcturans, or the Celestials, if you want to call them that, certainly were enormously advanced in bioengineering, and their lifespan was indefinite because of the procedures that they used. And those life-generating procedures, by the way, were one of the things we would talk about tonight with the Gladdens as they have found it in the Bible.
Uh-huh.
So to answer your question, yes, they would. He would be a very, very advanced person that would be among us, certainly with that technology and with that great insight.
Well, I wouldn't want you to take this next question wrong, but I'm really concerned about this. Because of the possibility of this actually being the case. But I really do enjoy your show. But how can you be sure that Satan isn't behind some of the things like firewalking and out-of-body experiences and belief in reincarnation and things like that?
Oh, my goodness gracious. Okay. That Satan is behind firewalking. Satan is behind... You know, Satan's probably behind the banking system.
Probably so.
You can get, you know, you can You can now take a mystic jump if you want to and come up with something that is ethereal and give it the name Satan and then let that be the progenitor of everything that is not constructive and evolving for humankind on the earth.
Uh-huh.
Which is not the point. Now, a lot of people have those belief systems, and if they want to have them, that's fine. That's not necessarily mine. I don't think that there is necessarily a great force that's controlling all of that. I think that there are a lot of people whose very basic nature has caused them to be the destructive ones in our society.
Uh-huh.
But whether they're being manipulated by this spiritual entity called Satan or not is something I think that's still up for conjecture.
Do you have any rule of thumb that you go by to, for lack of a better way of putting it, to keep yourself from evil?
Oh, yes. I think if you're not doing anything that you do should be motivated by love. All right, now,
uh-huh.
We want to get away from, again, a mystic term of love. I use love as in another way. As a love is a thought that creates energy that is in total harmony with the nature, character, and personality of the energy of the universe. Because when you think a thought, it creates energy. Now, if that energy is harmonious with everything around you, then your actions are going to be harmonious, or they're going to be loving. And I believe that you must be very diligent about the way you think. And in so doing, then you are going to be, and what we would see on the surface, as a very loving person. And you owe it to your spiritual self as well as your physical self to conduct yourself in that way all the time.
So what you're saying then is you achieve that through diligence in thought?
That's right.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right, Paul. Thank you very much for those questions. They're good ones. And we have Daniel on the line. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, it's Danielle.
Oh, Danielle.
Yes.
Excuse me.
Female version.
Right.
Last year when I was working for the company that produced the Philadelphia Story,
mm-hmm.
I was in touch with you, and you said that a movie was going to be made.
There's certainly one on the drawing boards for Heirs of the Gods.
Yes, and that there was a three-dimensional technique involved.
The technique is being developed now, and the studio is being developed in Houston.
Ah.
And for that, a movie like Heirs of the Gods would be impossible for Hollywood to make with
right.
its current technology to do properly. I suppose that you could do it. This, of course, is a decision that the Gladdens have to make. I know some of the people who are involved in wanting to do that project, but it hasn't even gotten to the point yet where we can sit down and start doing a lot of pre-work on it yet.
In other words, there's no script or...
Well, there are certainly some trial scripts
uh-huh.
out there that are fascinating, but nothing that is of any validity at all.
Okay.
And I'm sure that the Gladdens would like to see that happen as well as anyone else.
Uh-huh. How about financial backing or any interest in a release from the major motion pictures after it's been done?
Oh, after it's been done?
Uh-huh.
Well, I would imagine that that particular aspect of producing the movie will be taken care of in the original agreements. With the Gladdens and the movie makers themselves, they certainly want to distribute it.
Okay, did you also say that this new 3D technique didn't require glasses?
That's true.
Oh, that sounds exciting. Have you seen this work? Is there new equipment designed?
I have seen it work. It's fascinating to watch it.
Oh.
And,
in other words, if you could go ahead and shoot the movie right now,
mm-hmm.
you could do it in that technique and release it. It's not...
The technology is, yes, it's there.
Ready to go. Well, that sounds...
We wouldn't say it's ready to go into a full-scale motion picture yet, but the technology is there.
Uh-huh. Well, that sounds very exciting. I'll be looking forward to that.
Oh, so are we all.
Okay.
All right, Danielle. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind.
Yes.
Hello, Leota.
Hi, how are you? I haven't read the Gladden's book, Heirs to the Gods,
shame.
Well, is it similar to Zachariah Sitchin's The 12th Planet?
You know, there are some really minor similarities. Zachariah's works came out of the ancient Babylonian Sanskrit.
Yes, I know.
Uh-huh. And those writers that date back 5,000 years or so
mm-hmm.
were either great science fiction writers or they were talking about something. And if I can just... thumbnail what Zachariah was saying in the 12th planet, that there is another planet in the solar system that...
Oh, yes, Nibiru.
And that loops into here every 3,600 years. And during these close proximities to the inner planets of our solar system, there will be a lot of space travel between that planet and the Earth.
Right.
And there's quite a tale about the two brothers who were in charge, and they had fights.
Ian and Lil.
They created a species of people here to work in the mines. Because
that's us.
That's us.
We're the Lulus.
The Nephilim, as they, I think they were called. And they gave them the ability to procreate. I think one of the brothers got mad at the other.
Ian created us.
Right.
And then Lil had the crown.
There are some similarities in the things that Zechariah Sitchin found in those old writings to what the Gladdens are finding in the Bible. However, it is a different story altogether, because what the Gladdens are dealing with is just simply what the Bible is telling us. Now, you've got to remember that those old writers were living in close proximity to each other. There may have been a lot of crosstalk in their storytelling. It's hard to say.
Uh-huh. Well, I found The Twelfth Planet a very scholarly book.
Mm-hmm.
And
Zechariah is a very scholarly man, and his Stairway to Heaven is another.
Yes, I've read that, too. Well,
you've been on the show with me, by the way.
You mentioned that in the book Heirs to the Gods that the people arrived only 40,000 years ago.
35 or 40,000 years ago. It's hard.
But Zechariah Sitchin says that the Ea and his astronauts came from Nibiru 240,000 years ago.
Could be.
Uh-huh. They're much before.
You must understand also that, according to the Bible, there were other such life forms other than those that were involved with this experiment that the Bible deals itself with.
There I see.
Other life forms that were growing up in the Indus Valley and in the Swan Valley of China and the Nile Valley of Africa and in North and South America. So